Well, greetings, everyone. You're listening to Family Talk, the radio ministry of James Dobson Family Institute. I'm your host, Dr. James Dobson. You know, for today's broadcast, I want to address a sensitive issue that's impacting millions of families. I'm referring to the tough subject of eating disorders. In years past, that destructive pattern that leads to bulimia and anorexia were typically seen in younger people. Now, authorities are finding that many of these harmful conditions occur in older adults as well. In a moment, you're going to hear my colleague, Dr. Tim Clinton, discuss the problem with Dr. Margaret Naguib. She's a clinical Christian psychologist specializing in treating various eating disorders. Dr. Naguib graduated from Wheaton College and has been actively working in this field for over 20 years. She offers intensive counseling for individuals facing this issue and for families wanting help with loved ones. Today, Dr. Naguib will define eating disorders and explore the emotional baggage that often accompanies these issues. She and Dr. Clinton will also describe the various treatment options for those who are struggling and share with them the hope that Christ offers. Here now is Dr. Tim Clinton and Dr. Margaret Naguib on this edition of Family Talk.
We've been able to bring up into our studio Dr. Margaret Naguib, and we're going to talk about eating disorders. Margaret, thanks for joining us here on Family Talk.
Oh, such a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, as we get started, Margaret, you know, when I started out counseling years ago, I was involved at Liberty, and we were in the University Counseling Center, and I dedicated probably the first few years of my life to working with eating disorders.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, anorexia, bulimia. And at that time, we began to see that there was really like an epidemic of eating disorder issues on our college campus.
Yeah.
And by the way, come to realize it's an epidemic across the country, even probably more now than then.
Yeah, I think we're more aware now, so we're seeing the numbers, but absolutely, it's more of an epidemic. And where it used to be more of a younger disease, we're seeing it in midlife and even later. And so it seems to be expanding even across age.
Margaret, let's step back and let's talk about, I guess, bulimia and anorexia. Those are, seem to be the two most prominent disorders out there affecting women.
Yeah.
And help me differentiate between the two of them. Probably a lot of families, everybody listening probably knows of someone who's wrestling with this.
Absolutely.
Let's start with bulimia.
Okay. So bulimia is characterized by episodes of eating a lot of food, more than you normally would in one sitting.
Binge eating.
Yeah, binge eating, but even beyond. You know, this isn't, you know, the occasional binge that someone might have, but this is, you know, several thousand calories in one sitting, and then feeling really guilty about that and then needing to compensate for that, usually by purging. So throwing up or using laxatives. And they're caught in a cycle. So someone can binge several times a day. And sometimes it gets so bad that anything they eat, they'll even throw up. So it might not even be classified as a binge, but then they feel so guilty about eating anything that they'll throw it up.
And they struggle inside with feelings of self-worth and value. I mean, it's like this chaotic, almost insanity in, that they're wrestling with, right?
Yeah, so the research shows that people who struggle with binge eating tend to be shame prone, which means they tend to just feel shame across situations, and that they're trying to deal with this internal shame that they're not quite sure what to do with. And so the binge purge becomes a metaphor for, I want good things in my life, but I don't know how to deal with my feelings. And so how they treat food is a metaphor for what they're experiencing inside.
Anorexia differentiates a little bit here.
Right. Yep.
Tell us about what anorexia is.
So interestingly, the behavior is different, but the core things are body image. So body image is an issue with both. Self-hatred can be an issue with both. But the behavior, the metaphor, is more restrictive. So they don't eat. And so they can get very low body weight. And to be classified anorexic, you need to be a certain percentage below that body weight. And so they just deal with life by completely shutting everything out. And food is the way that they do that. And, you know, when you don't eat, you become very numb over time. It's a great way to numb yourself out, to not feel.
Tend to be highly perfectionistic.
Yes,
right?
Highly perfectionistic.
Those
right.
who may have lives that are out of control, but the one piece that they ultimately can control mm-hmm. is their food intake.
Absolutely.
And so
Absolutely.
Not that they aren't hungry, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're starved.
Yeah.
They often cook meals and do all kinds of elaborate
right,
things.
Cook for other people.
But mm-hmm. but they deny themselves
Absolutely.
Of that food.
Absolutely.
And it's because, again, everything around them is mm-hmm. chaotic and mm-hmm. seemingly out of control, but here's the little piece that I can put in my box.
Yeah.
And manage. And the problem is, and Marcus, isn't true, they say that this piece that they're controlling, the only piece they feel like they can control, mm-hmm. begins to control them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the key with both disorders, is they're trying to regulate. They're trying to regulate their emotions, but they do it through food. We classify binge eating as a disorder. There's binge eating disorder, and that's actually the highest percentage of people. And 30% of binge eating disorder is men. So a lot of men really? Struggle with binge eating disorder. We do see anorexia and bulimia in men, but it's a much lower percentage. But binge eating disorder is much more common with men.
Margaret, the battle or war with food here for a moment becomes so pervasive and consuming that often they drift into the use of diuretics, mm-hmm. Diet pills, mm-hmm. and more, right?
Yeah, drugs, stimulant drugs also. Meth. One of my best friends has a recovery from eating disorder, and she used to use meth in order to lose weight, and it worked for her.
Really?
And so she got into drugs and became, you know, dual diagnosis with an eating disorder and drug because of the effects of stimulants.
What about the whole issue of exercise, too?
Well, now we're getting into a whole nother thing that gets a little touchy, you know, because we all love our exercise. Mm-hmm. We all want to eat healthy. But even there, it might not be classified as, you know, an eating disorder, but you can have disordered exercise. You can have disordered eating in what they call orthorexia, where there's an over-focus of healthy, you know, this gluten-free, everything-free kind of diet, paleo, keto. So really, there's a lot of disordered eating in our culture. We really have poor boundaries around food.
Well, and when you think about a normal diet, mm-hmm. those who are getting lost here, let's talk about the anorexia for mm-hmm. a moment. Mm-hmm. They don't even want to eat a 2,000 calorie diet, let's say that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So they wind up doing minimal food intake, maybe right. 500, 1,000 calories,
right.
and then they jump into the gym on top of it
right.
to basically try to eradicate any food
Anything.
Consumption at
yeah.
all.
Yeah.
Then it becomes a really war, because once right. the family starts getting engaged and yeah. seeing some of these behaviors going on, they start getting worried. Okay, hey, I found a scale. You're weighing yourself way too much,
right.
or we're going out to dinner and you won't eat.
Right.
You won't eat with us. What starts happening to the family system in this journey?
It's really hard for families because, you know, they see things like food disappearing and family members not showing up to certain events because of food. And it's so hard. You know, you see someone who's anorexic, for example, and it's hard to know what to say to them. Most people want to just say, just eat. It's so, you know, why don't you just eat? Can't you see how thin you are?
Here, have a meal
can't.
With us.
Yeah.
yeah and the more you go there, the more the intensity ratchets up, and this
yeah.
really becomes a power struggle.
It does become a power struggle. It's really, really hard. And so family therapy is really important to educate, you know, spouses, parents, because it's counterintuitive. Everything that is intuitive to do with someone with an eating disorder is actually counter what we would suggest in treatment, because people really do have to take ownership. And so having a team around them is so important, taking that pressure off of the family and getting a dietitian in there, getting a therapist in there. To start being that, because they need accountability at first. We call it automatic eating. We put them on a meal plan, and it's my job as a therapist to help them to maintain that. And it's very hard. It's even hard for me as a professional. It's hard for me as someone who worked in residential treatment, where we had them living with us, and, you know, we can't even control, you know, everything. So it's really tough, but as you do the therapy, as you get their brain back online, as they're nutritionally more balanced, you know, they do want help underneath it all. They do want help. And that's the thing I think I would want parents and families to see, is at the end of the day, they really do want help, even though they're pushing you away so strongly around the food. The first thing I tell someone when they come to my office is, I am not going to steal this from you. I'm not going to make you eat.
Or if they think you're going to make them gain weight.
Make them gain weight.
Oh, are you kidding? They're mortified.
Right.
You hear what I'm saying?
Right.
But nevertheless, they may be in trouble.
Absolutely. Let's
stop right here for a second. I want you to talk to the mom or dad listening right now, really worried, concerned, and they're in the power struggle. They're trying to force the daughter to eat. You hear what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They're worried about this bulimia thing, and they're noticing a pattern. Mm-hmm. Maybe she's getting up, you know, within 10 minutes or so after eating. She's eating a normal meal, but you notice she's gone.
Sure.
And you know where she's going.
Yeah.
Talk to them real quick about in that moment to some ways to calm this for a second.
Yeah.
And what they should be thinking about doing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the first thing is to be calm themselves, which is so hard to say to a parent. But when you come to them in your anxiety and your fear, that's not going to help. So to come to that calm place and sit down with them at some point and to just be neutral in this, but honest, and say, hey, I'm noticing, and then just point out the behaviors. And I'm really scared and I don't know what to do. And I'm wondering how you're doing. I'm wondering what's really happening for you. Can we talk about what's underneath that? I'm not here to tell you what to eat or what not to eat, but can we talk about this? Because I'm noticing this. Can I be an ally for you? And sometimes that can be very disarming for someone with an eating disorder because they're not expecting that, right? They're expecting you to come in, guns blazing, trying to get them to stop throwing up or whatever it is. And sometimes it takes weeks and months of that before the person's ready to get some real help.
Moving forward here for a moment, I don't want to just live on the downside here because it's horrifying.
Yeah.
I've got a couple families in my mind right now where anorexia became a real lifelong journey for them. Margaret, let's talk about hope, first of all.
Yeah.
People do get really afraid. Remember the old Karen Carpenter story way, way back?
Sure.
And you hear statistics like 1 out of 4, 1 out of 5 actually die with the anorexia.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a segment of the population where it's really, really severe. It's not as common as you think, but when it is, it's very scary. And we do talk to them about some of the medical consequences, and then we monitor them. So sometimes the best I can do is say, hey, can we at least get blood tests? Can we get you seeing the doctor once a month to just make sure you're okay? And sometimes that's a place to start, is if they're at least willing to keep up with some medical testing just to make sure that their heart's okay.
Their electrolytes, everything
is
completely out of whack. The body's out of whack.
Right.
I know there's some debate out there about whether or not they believe anorexia is like an addiction. Okay. I know that's a whole different world. Okay. And I don't want to go there, but I want to talk about the patterns that are deeply ingrained here, because the body, the emotion, everything is so, like, it's in this tight box, and there's like this rumination that's going on, and they can't break out of it. It's almost like you can't talk them out of it.
No, you can't. No.
And so in those moments when we're going into that place, where do we go?
Yeah. And that's the point when I sit down with the parent and I say, your daughter, your son has a mental illness. They're not thinking straight. They're not rational. This eating disorder is holding their brain captive. And in fact, it's holding their spirit captive.
And they're not going to snap out of it.
They're not going to snap out of it. And so there does come a time, Tim, when you have to break out all the forces and get them into treatment. You know, whether that's an intervention, whatever it is. But there does come a point when you have to do that and recognize that they're going to kick and scream and do all of those things.
Getting everything in the fight.
Everything in the fight.
Hey, you're listening to Family Talk. It's a production of the James Dobson Family Institute. I'm your host today, Dr. Tim Clinton. I'm in studio with Dr. Margaret Naguib. She really is an expert, has worked for a long time in the area of eating disorders. And well, by the way, she has a great message on hope. Margaret, thanks again for joining us. And it's a fascinating discussion because this is a difficult
it really is.
Subject. It's a real journey for families. Margaret, okay, let's talk about treating anorexia, and we'll talk about bulimia too here in a moment. But most people now talk about a collaborative care, mm-hmm. where they talk about medical intervention, nutritional intervention, behavioral interventions, and more. And so you've got all these lanes we've got to work in. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the medical side. Mm-hmm. You do need to start there.
Yes, start there with
that
a physician.
That body is messed up.
Absolutely. They need to see a physician. They need to get all the proper blood tests to see where their electrolytes are, where their heart's at. And please find a physician that specializes in eating disorders. Unfortunately, physicians do not get trained in eating disorders. Sometimes they do the wrong thing. They tell them they're just fine or their BMI is fine. So
that's the body mass index.
Body mass index. Yeah. Look for a physician that specializes in eating disorder. Hard to come by, but that would be the goal. If not that, then someone who is willing to do the proper tests and at least understands that this is serious.
With the medical side, bring in the nutritional side.
Right.
Because the war, again, is over food, and you've got this body perception problem going mm-hmm. on. Mm-hmm. In other words, she can be as skinny as can be. Look mm-hmm. in the mirror at herself, and I mean turn sideways, and she's thin. Mm-hmm. And she thinks she's what?
They can't see it.
She thinks she's heavy.
Right.
That she's fat.
Right.
And she can't see it.
Yeah.
And it's mortifying.
Absolutely.
Now, getting the nutritional piece going, that's the battle zone, isn't it?
It is hard. Once again, a dietitian or nutritionist that specializes in eating disorders, because they understand the mentality. They understand that this is maybe the hardest part of the treatment team for them to embrace. And so someone who specializes in nutrition and eating disorders will be able to meet this person where they're at and slowly work them on a nutritional plan to get them back, you know, on their feet. But it needs to be someone who understands the mentality.
So a dietitian,
right.
Somebody.
Dietitian, nutritionist, registered dietitian with us. They call it a CEDS, a certified eating disorder specialist. And that's who I'd recommend. You don't want to send them to just any dietitian.
We use the word behaviorism or behavioral program here. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do is retrain them, right? Mm-hmm. So they've got some deeply ingrained habits that we're trying to break here. Mm-hmm. And so there needs to be a lot of accountability going on too. In this process.
You heard
me talk earlier about bulimia. Mm-hmm. Within the first 20 minutes mm-hmm. is when that food settles and nutritional value is yay or nay, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're trying to keep them inside appropriate, important windows.
Right. So food journals, keeping track of what they're eating, giving them a plan for 20 minutes after they eat, then they can't purge. And so helping them with all of that, the dietitian's going to be doing that.
Margaret, everybody's thinking the same thing. The emotional issues. Why? What's going on deep down inside mm-hmm. that's driving this? And families ask questions all the time. Mm-hmm. I've sat in the room many, many times
yeah.
and had these discussions. What have you found? What have you seen some common themes through the years? I know with anorexia, perfectionism is a big one.
Sure, sure.
Imagine this just for a moment. Mm-hmm. The ability to be that disciplined.
And this is true.
Think about that.
Yeah, it's almost that's human.
Almost, it's like an extraordinary gift in a sense.
Yeah.
That they have that much willpower.
It's true. So you're kind of hitting on something there, because there's this lack of real sense of, am I effective in the world? Am I good enough in the world? And then they find this behavior where they're superhuman and they can actually look around and feel excellent at something. And they really are. They're excellent at it. And so I would say at the core, it's emotional regulation, not knowing how to deal with the tough feelings in life, the sadness, the depression, the shame, the times when we all feel like, am I good enough? And not knowing who they are in Christ, not knowing their value. And this helps them feel powerful. It helps them feel accomplished. And it becomes, in some ways, like a religion. This is what I need to do to feel okay in the world. That part of it can be very, very addicting, because there's very clear reinforcement. Every time they lose a pound, they feel successful.
Mm. And it drives it.
And it drives it, absolutely. So that's what you're talking about. You're talking about core identity, and I need this to feel okay about myself. So the metaphor I often use is of a rickety raft, and you're out there in the storm, and the eating disorder is your rickety raft, and it's keeping you alive. It's keeping you alive. So I am not going to rip that away from you, because that's the only way you actually know how to cope in this world and with what's going on inside of you that you may not even be fully aware of. Mm. But what if there's something better? What if we can begin to look at that raft and know that ultimately you're going to die on that raft? You know, it's keeping you alive, but it's a rickety, rotten raft. And so how can we slowly begin to exchange this rickety, rotten raft for something much more stable? And that's going to bring you life instead of hold you captive, which ultimately is not life when you're held captive to something else. That's the metaphor that I often use that can be very helpful to both family members and the person.
And there tend to be some pretty strong family dynamics going on. A lot of it, first of all, is just simply because of the chaos that's now in our family. Mm-hmm. You know that? Mm-hmm. We're in this massive tug of war. Mm-hmm. We're confused. People mm-hmm. are hurt. But Margaret, there can also be some like parent issues where there is somewhat of a disconnect at times. Not saying all the time, but it can be. Mm-hmm. And so how do you address those kind of family issues when you're walking down this road of treatment with someone who's anorexic or bulimic?
Yeah. I mean, think about a child who didn't know how to assert themselves or maybe got back from the parent something that wasn't helpful at the time. But ultimately, you know, it's really hard because sometimes when parents come in, you know, they feel a lot of shame for what's happening. But ultimately, it comes down to this person not being able to express what they really think. If they can begin to, number one, express those feelings and not feel like they're going to be overwhelmed by those feelings in a healthy way, then they can take back their life and not feel as dependent on the food or the behaviors to communicate what they're trying to communicate so desperately. So really, underneath every anorexic and bulimic, they're very tender-hearted souls. They're tender-hearted souls that don't want to disappoint you. They're people pleasers.
And then they drift right back into their world.
And then they drift in their world, but then they use their eating disorder as a way to express their anger or whatever it is.
Margaret, then the thinking challenges, the stinking thinking, and so much more that just goes with all this. It's a total spin.
Yeah.
Margaret, one more important question. If there's a family, someone who's struggling with an eating disorder right now, what do they do? I mean, and we know you've got to get the right kind of help here.
So do not do this alone. Seek out a mental health professional, whether it's a physician or a therapist or a dietitian who understands eating disorders, has worked with eating disorders. Make sure you ask them, have you worked with eating disorders? Is it a specialty? And even if it's just the parent or their loved one meeting with this person first, just make sure you connect with a professional who understands and works with eating disorders.
And the good news is we're making strides in these areas, and we're seeing help and hope come to individuals and families in special ways.
My favorite saying as of late is hope dies last. You can't kill that sucker. It always dies last. So to the family members, I say never, ever give up hope. She or he is going to give you the run of your life, and you're going to feel like you're going to give up. You're going to feel completely powerless as a parent. But hope dies last. Don't give up hope. And for the person who is struggling, I would say there's so much more for you, and God's just waiting, and he's with you, and he'll sit with you while you're pinching and purging. He hasn't left you. Can we talk to him? Can we begin to see what he has for you and see if there isn't another way?
And there is another way.
Absolutely.
There's a better way.
Right.
If we can just get you started.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that starts with a decision.
Right.
Let's make a call. Let's reach out.
Yeah.
Let's have that conversation.
Yeah, let's get some information.
Mom and Dad, help me.
Yeah.
Let's do this thing.
Yeah.
Margaret, you know what? What a great program. We've got to do a lot more on this because this is so prevalent. And so many families are out there and they live in shame and the silence of this, you know, they're like kids on a bicycle. They want to close their eyes for 1 or 2 seconds and open them back up. Remember you used to do that as a kid? And you think when you open them, and you think everything's going to be different, but it isn't.
It's not.
No.
Yeah.
God wants to speak into that. We really believe it. Thanks for joining us here on Family Talk. Thanks for all you're doing. We're praying for and with you.
Thanks, Tim.
You've been listening to Family Talk. That was Dr. Tim Clinton's important conversation with Dr. Margaret Naguib about eating disorders. Now, food is a part of our daily life, of course, and struggles with food have touched many, many lives, perhaps even yours or someone close to you. But I want you to know that there is hope, there is healing, and there is recovery. Using professional care and counseling and long-term, what some people would call self-care, is invaluable. Now, you can do so when you find your strength and confidence in God. If you or someone you know is struggling with an eating disorder, don't hesitate to seek help. Our friends at the American Association of Christian Counselors can help you find a trained, professional Christian counselor in your area. Simply go to connect.aacc.net. On that page, you'll find a search tool that will help you find a directory and get started. That's connect.aacc.net. And by the way, if you'd like to learn more about Dr. Margaret Naguib, simply visit our website at drjamesdobson.org. Click on the broadcasts page, and there you'll find a link for her website. Do you enjoy listening to Family Talk? Well, there is still time to order your Best of 2022 broadcast collection. It contains 6 CDs filled with valuable content that is a great addition to your home ministry library. For a suggested donation of $50, you can order one today. You can place your order online at drjamesdobson.org or give us a call at 877-732-6825. We would love to hear from you. So please contact us with your comments, your questions, and even your prayer requests. Again, the number to call is 877-732-6825. I'm Roger Marsh, and from all of us here at the JDFI, we pray that God continues to bless you and your family. You've been listening to Family Talk, the voice you trust for the family you love.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.